So, welcome back to the main room. Certainly sounded from here as though there was a good buzz of conversation going on. We've had a fascinating discussion here. We've got all the right answers now, but it's too late to share them with you, I'm afraid. So, what we will do instead is just as we did last month, get some feedback from the groups and allow, as appropriate, the panellists perhaps to comment on things that are said. Mike, would you want to come and lead us off with your group?
From there or
from here?
I managed to get into the chairing position because I boasted that I had experience in the last month, right? And there was actually a very good idea, which was to give us a little crib sheet. And without being too slavish, going to work through these things one at a time. The first question was, which of the panelists did you find, or what was anything said by the panelists which you found surprising and helpful? And we sort of picked out more or less one from everything, from everyone. The one which, in a way, came from Eric about language and the inability of mathematics to prove within itself, and therefore there's absolutely no hope of looking in that direction for the proof of the existence of God and so on. That was one. There was a sort of implicit and rather negative feeling about what you might call Western society at the moment. And in the biological version, it's sort of, for a long time, meaning in a sort of hundreds of years since, we have not been integrated, people to people, people with animals, plants, the world in general, and so on and so on. And that I think, is reflected in a couple of other places as well. And then Isabel's idea about the community and a sort of assumption that God is there and you don't have to ask this question, this was taken as, I think, a good starting point by pretty well everybody. And then finally, the last speaker more or less gave us the way that we were going to answer the final question about how we think about God and so on. In the second question, which of the four outlooks could you most easily relate to? We could not pick. We are not being political here. We did find everybody gave us some insight and was very helpful. I actually would like to just mention my friend Eric ran over in time as usual because I'm a timekeeper, but he knew I was going to say that anyway. There was actually in question three a rather sad thing, and that was, do you find among your circle of friends that they ask these sorts of questions? And with one exception, which was Joan, people were in agreement that this is very seldom the case. There was quite a long discussion about why it is. Young people are very busy, and so on and so on, and I'm not in suggesting that we go over it, but it was a really sad reflection that these questions are seldom asked. And then finally, how would we answer the two questions, why are we here? We just choose to paraphrase Alan in a way. The glory of God is to be alive. And then lastly, what purpose does life have? And I detected among the group that there is a purpose, and most people don't know what that purpose is, but there is a sense that they find it for a while and then they lose it and so on. I'd just like to add something which I didn't bring up in the group. I happen to be a member of a scientific and medical network, and there's a thread of thinking through there which is to do with out-of-body experience and near-death experience. So I've met over the last 15 years or so lots of people who have had OBEs and NDEs, and when they've had that, they often find their purpose in life. So somehow, in those particular cases, they were jerked into thinking hard about things, and they feel a lot better for it. So I think there's some, what you might call, fringe evidence that there is a purpose in life from such incidents. Thank you.
Anyone want to comment on any of that? That was all very balanced and beautifully laid out. Do you have a sense, any of you to answer this, that these are live questions, or is this this whole thing that we are doing of looking at science and faith and trying to work out what life's all about, is that a minority interest, or is it a significant question for our culture? You don't have to answer that.
I think perhaps I'd say that in a funny kind of way, it may be people who don't come to church who talk about these things more than people who do come to church. And that's just something that we perhaps should be aware of, that sometimes it's useful entering into a discussion with people who don't see themselves as being particularly religious, because we may find that we have more in common than we think at first.
Okay, we'll come back to these things. Arthur, would you like to share what your group were doing?
We were quality, not quantity. The small group tucked in the corner there. We had the same questions, but I haven't got answers under headings particularly.
Just for guidance. So
these are a series of sort of anecdotal comments that were made and insights as we jumped backwards and forwards. One of the thoughts was the question of being in touch with one's ancestors. In other words, why are we here? We are here because we were born of a mother and father. And why were they born? Because they were. So the ancestral links are there. And that may seem a rather facile answer, but it does mean that you are part of a community by birth, the sort of point that Isabel was making. And for some people, this membership of this family community in the broadest sense gives them an identity. Sorry, we've got to stop. And then that raises one question, because the intercession of the saints are more, maybe our Catholic and Orthodox friends, the Protestant view more that one has died, you're in glory, praise the Lord, we remember a wonderful life. But other branches of the Christian church will think back to the departed and to the saints and pray for them or ask them to pray for us. Question to Alan, then maybe, is, you know, how does this give us purpose? We're saying that, or those branches of the Christian church are interested in this because it is the broader community,
yes,
and you're not just left on your own.
I think it's important when we're thinking of the saints not to see them as past people, if you like, but as present companions. Mother Julian of Norwich has got a wonderful phrase, and she calls other people of faith, she calls them our even Christians, by which she means even Christians, fellow Christians. And there is a sense in which our fellow Christians include all the saints, alive and departed. And sometimes I think we forget that in Christ we are all one.
Can we carry on with this? You're the chair. So.
Yeah, you carry on with yours.
And I'm going to end up by looking at Alan again, but this isn't quite on purpose. It's just the way it's written here. You talked of there has been an evolution in theology. In one sense, we were hoping to raise that a month ago, but it wasn't so much raised. We had the evolution in science, we have the evolution in theology. Are we sure it's an evolution in progress? It's a change.
Yes.
Are we necessarily improving? Or going backwards? There was one thought.
Yes.
Please, can I finish? One thought came in our group, which was that the more we know, the more our circle of knowledge grows, the more we realize, the more we have a circumference to realize how much we don't know. And this is the case with science, as we heard a month ago. Is it the same with theology?
Yes, I believe it is, but I think that there are important strands of theology which are comfortable with not knowing. And I think perhaps there's something to learn from that, you know, that we find God in darkness as well as in light. I mean, the Old Testament teaches that. To you, darkness and light are the same. They are alike. We need not be afraid of our ignorance, because we have a relationship with God which is one of trust. And provided we have that relationship, we don't need to have the answers to all the questions.
Now I'm going to jump, as I said, I've bits and pieces here. Pose the question, I will not say who gave this comment, but it was a very rich input, into say, you know, why are we here? Does God exist? That tends to be a rich man's question. If you're poor, you're desperately trying to stay alive, particularly in the developing world, you don't have time to ask why. I am here. Fact. God is there. Fact. We are living in a... So, partly from Isabel's intervention, we warmly appreciated Isabel's intervention, but one of the questions was, the very question we're discussing wouldn't be discussed because you haven't got time for that in the village. You've just got to keep your family alive.
But then the other side of the same question then would be, because you are so poor, then you begin to ask that is poverty connected to being religious or to believing in God? That when, if Africa was rich, then they would not believe in God anymore. Is that the question that we are asking?
Like in the West?
Yes.
Yeah. I better finish soon, because there's bits and pieces here that could go on forever. Just like Eric, sorry. Physicists, we learned last month, seem to be, many of them, very happy to be Christians. There's a question whether biologists find it more challenging being Christians, and then the question, would psychiatrists find it even more challenging, and is that something we might look at in the next month or the month after? The science, or the practice of psychiatry. We are looking at the mind of people and what is leading them to believe in God. Is this just a fiction? So it seems that one, is there a dispensation to be more, open to religious conviction depending on one's scientific background? I haven't done credit to all the discussion, but I think that's enough.
Thank you very much. I was, in any case, thinking of posing a challenging question to David, because we're talking, much of the conversation has gone around the sense that if we have a purpose to life, a reason for our being here, it's to do with something that's bigger than our own life in terms of those who went before us, who are still in some sense around, those who are coming after us, who we expect to in some sense be part of. I'm wondering, is that a difficult concept for you, looking at life through a microscope, in a sense, as you often do, the idea that life continues beyond what we observe as death? Does that, I think in a sense that's what Arthur was hinting at, does that make it difficult for you?
Not necessarily, but I think it does come down to, you know, personal beliefs at the end of the day. And, you know, going back to the question you asked originally, you know, can scientists prove that God is there? And I think, and Eric said, no, we can't, mathematicians can't, and I think biologists, other scientists can't either. In some ways, you sort of need to sort of set aside sort of your scientific thinking from, you know, your own personal beliefs in that sense. So, to try to answer the questions Arthur was raising, I don't think there's any particular problem with biologists being Christians, being believers. I certainly know plenty of other biologists who are, so it's not as though we're sort of an endangered species, so to speak. I've no idea what the statistics would say, you know, whether in any one discipline you've got more or less, but I don't think that there's a sort of an inherent difficulty in being a believer if you are a biologist compared to being a physicist.
Mark, let's come to the third final group and we'll see how we're doing.
Hopefully I have a summary of it all. It's kind of my note taking is not very efficient, but so when we covered the questions that were suggested by Ian, and So one thing that was first put out, I think, which we all kind of agreed, was about the point about evolution, that it gives you the how of the purpose of life, but not the why. And so that was one thing that we all kind of agreed upon fairly quickly. The second thing was that a question that we was triggered, let's say, about the differences of views between Alan and Isabel, where we have the importance of, let's say, the community, yeah, in terms of the creation, while Alan also had the point of view that that the creation is something larger and that we are only a part of that. And so that was another, let's say, difference that we kind of noticed. Perhaps it isn't a major difference, but something that we've noticed as well. So that was for the first question. The second one, the four outlooks, was basically a general agreement that Isabel's view, particularly about answering about the things about the community and being part of God's plan, and that one of the things that one member of our group pointed out was that David's point about the altruism for the in response to the Ebola crisis. One of the things although it was mentioned, like why was that not mentioned even more, let's say, as part of our conversation today? And so, and that would be something like something very special that makes us somewhat different from, let's say, just being some kind of sense of animals, like, or amoebas from an evolutionary standpoint. So it's something that's less than something selfish. Yeah. So then, that was the discussion for the outlooks, and then this got a similar answer for the thing about the circle of friends, the discussing about these questions, and the best point is it's a categorical no, that people among their circle of friends never brought up issues about things such as the purpose of life, which I personally I find interesting because at least among physicists, we tend to occasionally discuss about these kind of things, openly, even though we may not have the same points of view in religion, and we often talk about it. So that I found was quite surprising. And finally, how would you answer the question about what why are we here and what purposes does my life have? Basically, there was one answer that which we all, I think, kind of agreed right away was basically to be able to do good and to help others. That was the immediate response, basically which fits in very well with the altruism that David mentioned as well, and that it basically just shows us that we're something more than biological beings that just came out from something on the past. Yeah. So.
Yeah, thank you. That does seem to be somehow or other a sort of key question, that is there anything about us humans which doesn't fit the biological pattern, or if I may even say so, the mathematical pattern of what we would expect human life to look like, if we just go with evolutionary theory, or if we just go with a mathematical modelling of how humans live. And David, the point you raised about people going sacrificially to help those suffering from Ebola seems to have caught the imagination, because perhaps that's what we all want, some evidence for, something to convince ourselves that we're not just life forms trying to keep our gene pool going.
Would you maybe want to say a bit more about that? I mean, you did say perhaps this is, I don't know, I mean, are there examples and viruses of little individual viruses going to help others sacrificially or whatever the simplistic picture might be?
I think it is a lot more complex than that, and there are studies going on, you know, to look at altruistic behaviour in animals, for example, you know, to see, you know, is there, you know, there are examples that are being studied, and that there could be benefits to the population from that altruistic behaviour. So that is you know, an emerging area of work. But I mean, I think, you know, as Christians, we're called upon to love our enemies, you know. That's obviously incredibly difficult to do, but you know, again, biologically, that doesn't make sense. If your enemies are trying to exterminate or kill or whatever, you know, that doesn't make sense. But that is what we're called upon to do, and I think, you know, where you see that happening, or if you see that happening, then that makes has a very profound effect on not just the person but others who are witness to that. I think so. You know, that's where it becomes difficult to sort of apply, you know, the biological thinking to what we believe in terms of Christians, I think.
We are having this discussion early in Holy Week, and so we're all, most of us in our churches, going to be thinking about this, you know, our example in Jesus Christ allowing himself to be killed rather than fighting back. And in a sense, I suppose it's difficult to find a rationale for why people would find that attractive. Many people don't find it attractive. But what do we see in that, in someone willingly suffering and dying, that we feel it would draw us to that? Isabel, I'm going to ask you a specific question, which I know the answer to, and they do say you should never ask questions you don't know the answer to. Do Protestants have historically a particular answer to that question, what's the purpose of life? Just to give us a bit of historical context, see, this actually is not a new question for us.
I would connect it to my own catechism studies. You know, when I was young and, you know, Presbyterian, we were introduced to the chief question, which was, you know, what is the purpose for us human beings here? And it says that, you know, we are here to glorify God and to serve God for the rest of our lives. So I think, you know, this is something that is ingrained in us, you know, through our Sunday school days, you know, our catechumen classes, and even afterwards. And I think this is something that also unites us as Protestants. We have different levels of understanding the same thing, but at the center of it all is that we are created to glorify God and to save God, you know, throughout our lives.
And a follow-up to that, perhaps, does it matter that we're aware of that? Because we're seeing here people are not asking these questions. People are getting on with their lives, capitalism and materialism. And I'm thinking that there are trees out there which we might look at and say, these are just glorious. They're beautiful, the way they stretch out and they grow, and they're glorifying their creator. But they're not aware of it. And it probably doesn't matter much to them whether we think that or not. So the question, and this is in a sense for any of you, does it matter if we think there's a purpose to life, or can we glorify God simply by being here and being diverse and doing all the various creative things we do?
I think it matters because, you know, when you focus your life on God, right, God as the beginning and the end of your life, then the purpose is understood in this particular context, and therefore the way you choose what is a priority in my life and what is not is connected to the purpose of your life. So if I know what is the purpose for my life, then life becomes simpler. Okay, it's not complicated, right? And I also look at my own identity within that purpose. Because I know then that, you know, I'm a Christian, I believe in God, I believe in Jesus Christ, I'm here for a particular period, and there's also life after death. then I understand everything else that is happening in my life in the context of this larger plan, that the way I solve my problems is also connected to the larger picture, that I don't allow small things, to make me feel insignificant, because I know where I'm coming from, I know where I'm going, and that this is, I'm a pilgrim, and that there is a purpose to what to my life here on earth.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps if I, yes, I entirely agree. I just perhaps might add that we're so familiar with the words, thy kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. But we need to stop and think about those words and where they take us, because they take us to the fact that we live in a world which is very different from the heavenly realm, and yet we are called to do what we can to bring earth into that community of heaven.
I'm going to ask there are questions. No one was looking at me, so I was assuming there might not be. I'll just go to Felix first, who I think looks worryingly keen. I'll just repeat that for the recording. The question to Isabel, coming from a place where faith is strong and is assumed, to Europe, what are your reactions to the changes you see? And secondly, what should we be doing about it?
You know, working for the World Council of Churches, I'm beginning to realize actually that the West is not as godless as you think, because we visit so many churches and I see people worshiping and taking God seriously. And I look at it, from that context, that you're not as godless as you as you want to believe you are, because there's still hope in there. Maybe the bigger difference then would be in the global South, you see more of young people in the churches and actively involved in what's going on in the churches. When I see the global North, I look at older people, in the churches. So there's that gap. In who is in the church, but people are in church. And there's also that spirituality which I've noticed, which is not connected to religion, but still people believe. Whilst for us in the global South, there's an emphasis in the social element of your faith, as well as wanting to fellowship, to focus on God, but also on each other, and the younger people coming in, the older people. With us in the global South, because of the younger generation, then you believe that there's a future for the church, and that the church is ever expanding. And when we come here, I also see, churches from the global South coming to the global North. Right? So there too, I see us sharing into this faith, that these churches, that are coming from the global South are not necessarily only for those who are from the global South who are in the North. But I also see some people from the global North going to the churches that are coming from the global South. So there's the federalization going on there. Missionaries coming from the South to the North, and from the North to the South. So there's the gospel going from everywhere to everywhere.
Yeah. Ewart, do you want to just come out, Ewart, and use the microphone as you're young and nimble?
Thank you very much. Do you want me to introduce myself or just get on with it?
Just get on. We know you.
Thank you. I find the comment from the first group very helpful about near-death experiences, and also what Ian said about psychiatrists and whether they would have a harder time in believing, because I find that the comments from Isabel are very helpful, so long as we take as our baseline that this is the world we're living in and that we don't really worry too much about the broader creation that Alan was talking about. But essentially it sounds as though the purpose of life is almost like an insurance policy in that respect, in that we make sure we behave ourselves because we don't honestly know what comes next, but we know that we believe there is something there, but you're telling us we don't need to believe too much about what it actually is, and therefore we don't really need to worry, and we just know how to behave ourselves at the moment. Okay, fair enough. And that seems to work well enough within better in some cultures than in others. In that respect, I thought that what the scientific perspective had to say would be extremely helpful, in as much as if it can tell us what's going on inside our own heads, as was mentioned. If this gives us more of an insight into what actually happens beyond the death experience, that to some extent is driving, it would sound, why we're behaving in the way that we do at the moment. I know this, if you like, from experience in a way, because as I think most of you know, I'm type 1 diabetic, insulin controlled, which means that I have a few occasions of extreme hypoglycemia, which essentially means that your blood sugar level is unhealthily low. I'm not calling it a near-death experience, but I know that when something strange happens to you, and I know that I've acted in ways where I don't remember anything that I did, I don't remember whoever was controlling my body, if you like. People have told me I've done things that I have no recollection of doing, no recollection of controlling. And if science is able to explain to me who's controlling this body that I'm in at a moment like that, in the same way as who's controlling a hyper-drunk person, who's controlling some mentally ill persons, and we had a discussion about that in our group regarding the suicide crash earlier this week. When a body is being controlled by somebody that doesn't seem to reflect the individual, that would seem to give us a much better insight into the question of what happens once we're separated from our bodies. And that, I think, would seem to be the one bit that's missing to answer the logic otherwise of what our theological experts have explained to us. But I think that's where science has a real ability to help the theological perspective, because I would imagine that it would be scientists who would come to tell us how our minds and or brains, whatever it is being controlled that's in there. And perhaps that would give us a greater perspective to explain why it should matter in terms of a near-death experience or whatever else is going on in these times when we see things that we can't explain and where human bodies are behaving in a way that doesn't seem to represent the human beings that we know. Sorry if that's a bit confusing, but thank you very much for listening.
Yeah. Fascinating conversations to be had around that whole sense of what is it that does make us stop and think about why we're here, and why do we not do that until there's a shock to the system. And I'm just going to, Eric, in a moment ask you just to sum up what you've learned from tonight. So I'm just giving you that warning. But also being reminded by what you say of Eric's teaching more from physics than maths, in a sense, that we can now observe that it is possible for a thing and its qualities, properties, nearly passed there, to be separated and to go in different and to be present in different places at the same time, and all of these things that our brains can't quite make sense of, just as we can't quite make sense of how we could survive physical death. But there's so much out there that already we can't understand, but we know is true, in a sense. I think just looking at the time, I'm just going to come to Eric, because you haven't spoken much, and that always worries me when you're quiet for a while. So would you want to, just having started the evening, just sum up what's been exciting for you out of tonight?
I think that's a very tall order. I would like to take one point. I think that this point about the circle of friends, and seldom are we discussing such issues. I think that this is something that we need to really reflect on. I think it's something to do with the fact that young people are not involved in these discussions. I think people who, if you're a young person, that's the period when you ask these sorts of deep questions about why am I here? You react against your parents' attitudes on this, and I don't think we do this at all enough. And I think that's part of the challenge to our churches to try and to involve young people more, because I think we would get those questions coming out. I think our circle of friends is probably not so interested in these questions, but I think young people are, and we need to address that question, I think, very much within our community.
Beautifully summed up. Oh, Kuseko? Oh, young people, yes, yes. We have young people with us. They're a strange species. But we're very glad, and I know you both have some very interesting questions because I've had these conversations with you. Why are we here tonight? We're here to talk to each other and be stimulated. I hope that's happened, and please accept the invitation to hang on for a bit longer. Tea and coffee and various refreshments are available, and I know we'll be very happy to continue the conversations. And we reconvene, to use a good Presbyterian term, next month. In here, and the date for that, David Asprey is about to tell me. Monday the 27th of April. Now, we're switching from Mondays to Tuesdays. Is there a pattern in this? Is there a scientific reason? Is there a spiritual reason? Is it something to do with booking the hall? Well, something like all of that. Monday the 27th of April. Back in here, and please tell your circle of friends, it's very interesting.
And the topic next time will be?
The topic next time will be, David is just going to remind us all, most of us know.
What should I do?
What should I do?
How can we tell right from wrong? On what basis can we make ethical choices in life?
So we had this fascinating thought behind that very strange sounding question of, if, given that the world is messed up and that we are messed up in some way, where are we going to find the answers to make things better? Does science and technology provide us with answers as to how we ought to live, what changes we need to make? Or actually, do we need to look to the faith side of us, the spiritual side of us, to find the kind of changes we need to make and the answers for the world? All of that will be revealed next month. So you're all very welcome. Thank you very much.